Hi, my name is Dave Reske, and welcome to this edition of In the Now, where we focus on uncovering myths and misunderstandings of marketing and leadership with some of the world's most interesting people. And my guest today is Michael O'Hara, CEO of Impact Enterprises. Michael, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks. Great to be here.
So Michael has a fantastic resume and history. He's served as a CEO and COO of a variety of SaaS technology, education, marketing, and lead generation companies. His experience working with global and domestic companies in leadership development, scaling revenues, organizational design, marketing, and capital development. He has a broad history and a variety of business strategies, including lead generation, sales, technology, M&A, and finance, with companies ranging from early stage to multi-billion dollars in annual revenue. Wow, that's impressive, and I'm exhausted just thinking about all you've done.
My mother wrote it.
Yeah. Your mother's a very good publicist for you. I'll ask you later what was your favorite role, but we've worked together on clients, and I've always appreciated your strategic thinking and your focus on getting things done. Not everybody can kind of do both of those things, so I'm looking forward to talking more about that. But in preparation for this call, we had a great conversation about work-life balance, and I'd like to ask you to start by smashing a myth about creating work-life balance in your life and your career. Should people be doing that?
It doesn't exist. And I liken it to, we'd sooner find a leprechaun at the end of a rainbow with a pot of gold and handing it up to you than you're going to find work-life balance. And I think, I read and I see these comments all the time about people, how you need to achieve balance. And you do need to have balance. You need to set your priorities about home. You know, if your kid is sick, you need to be with your child. You know, if your wife needs you or your partner needs you, you need to be there. But at the end of the day, it occurred to me, someone was saying, how do you manage this? And you're always working, it seems like. And it occurred to me, and I was thinking about my wife and how she had let me kind of do my job at one time, point in time, at an office in Israel, and the work days there are Sunday through Thursday. And you can't not, you know, be working with the office when they're open if Sunday is their first day of the week. And it occurred to me that I had figured out an alternative work-life balance, and it's integration, work-life integration, I call it. So you allow work to be integrated into your life, and you know, life to be integrated into your work. If you need to do an email at 9 or 10 o'clock at night, you send out the email. If you need to be home because your child is sick and your partner needs to be, you know, working, you go home. If you want to, you know, be a good dad, you go watch your daughter play her field hockey game, and you don't feel guilty about, you know, leaving the office and going to watch your daughter play a field hockey game. At the same time, you don't feel guilty when you're doing a little work on a Sunday night or in front of the NFL. You know, it's how can you integrate, you know, your whole life into your whole life. So work gets integrated into everything that you do, and your life gets integrated. It's not that you don't set priorities. It's not that you don't, you know, I mean, I had a colleague I worked with one time. He was a chairman, and his daughter was sick in Boston. And I said, oh my gosh, you need to be there. I said, I'll cover for you. Everything will be fine here. And he said, no, I'm not going to go. I said, oh, this is serious. I said, you should, you know, hop the flight. No, I don't need to be there. And I thought to myself, I said, wow, you know, being a dad is the most important thing I have. Being a son and being a husband is probably second. Being an employee is number three. Yet some people will say, you never stop working. So work is my mistress, but I also know how to prioritize that. So it's work-life integration.
Yeah, no, that's really powerful. Let me just see if we can unpack that a little bit for different situations. Does it work, or is it easier when you're kind of an entrepreneur, you're running your own business, or you're working for somebody else in a big company and you're not working remote? Or do you have the same issues in work-life balance, or can you achieve work-life integration as easily if you're kind of working for the man?
Not only can you do it, but it's all about managing and setting up expectations with your superiors. You know, whether it's if you're the CEO, it's your board of directors or the chairman or something like that. If you're a line worker or something like that, it's your supervisor, and saying, next Tuesday, I'm going to be at my daughter's soccer game. And, I'll certainly make up for that. I think, you know, I do that because I'm always working, but it's just managing and setting expectations. And I think it's really imperative that people have that kind of conversation, equal stature with their bosses, with their supervisors, and their understanding. I think they'll watch and they'll say, wow, he really does, she really does work hard, and she's, you know, really always wired. You know, if you send a, you know, information or a text or a Slack message off hours or something like that, do you respond and things like that. I have had to have conversations with people, you know, that say, if the place is burning down, you call me at 3 o'clock in the morning on Sunday, that's okay. If you're calling me to say, check in and saying, hey, how you doing? How's your weekend at 10 o'clock on Sunday night? That's crossing, you know, that's crossing over a bit too far. So, you know, it's just managing those expectations we manage, by the way, up as we manage down, even you and I mean, you really do. I mean, I go home, or I used to work in an office, and you had two daughters and a wife that was your boss, but you had boards and you had directors that, you know, you're never the ultimate authority unless you're just a complete, you know, wholly owned, or, you know, it's just your own business. But so you manage up, and having that conversation with your boss or your boss's boss and managing those expectations, they'll respect you. They'll respect you for that.
Yeah. So that managing up is really an important part of that. Is it easier, do you think, if you love your job and you love your work, you know, to be having that work-life balance? Because, you know, I love what I do, you know, running this agency. And so I don't mind checking my email when I'm on vacation or responding to a client on a Sunday afternoon. It's part of, you know, just part of like my mission and like how I feel about my world. But if you hate your job or you're frustrated, is it harder to have that work-life balance? Do you feel like that's just kind of intruding? And is that kind of a core of how you should think?
Oh, there's no doubt, but maybe you wouldn't hate your job so much if you establish the right kinds of communications with your bosses and managing those expectations. There are people that will abuse that relationship. You know, I've had people in superior positions that will text you or call you on a Sunday night and say, how's the weekend? You know, and you have to be able and be willing to say, look, let's have a conversation. I'm okay. You call me anytime, you know, about work and things like that. But if you're just calling to check in or to see if I'm paying attention to whether or not I'm on Slack, then that's a problem. And you need to have that conversation. And if you don't like your job, if you're unhappy, yeah, it makes it even harder because you're bitter about sharing your personal time with the office, especially if there's some expectation of you, you know, watching your Slack messages because there's a big contract out there or a proposal out there. So it does put more pressure, you know, on the individual, but it doesn't make it any less important to have that conversation.
So what do you say to people who are on the other extreme, who are just not, who are kind of spending all their time at work and because they want to, and not spending the time they need in their own lives to kind of, you know, invest in family, friendships, relationships? Is there a message for them on work-life
balance? Yes. I mean, I have that conversation all the time. I mean, if someone texts me about something or Slacks me about something that's not super important, on way off hours, I'll say, my first question for you is, why are we having this conversation now? Why aren't you with your family? Mm-hmm. Is this something that we can both talk about Monday when you get back to work? You know, because I'm here if you need me, but you should be spending time with your family. You should be spending time because, you know, you really do need to leave work mentally and physically and be able to check out and be a good dad and, you know, be a good partner and a good neighbor, you know, whatever it is, a good sports fan, but it's just boundary conditions. It's knowing that. But I've had that conversation with people a lot. You know, it's like saying, you know, I'm happy that you're working this hard. I've found that some people, if I Slack them, because again, partly is age, but if I think of something, I might just quick send an email or quick send a Slack message, and I find that some people respond right away, and I'll say, look, this can wait till Monday. I just did it. So I wanted to remember to get it off my brain and get it down something so we have the conversation. So sometimes I'll even preface that. But I do have that conversation with colleagues and partners and employees all the time, saying, you know, it's important for you, especially if they're feeling guilty about going home because their daughter's running a fever and their wife's having a tough time getting home from work. So go.
Yeah. You got to do that. One of the things I've learned is that like if I'm sending an email on a Saturday or Sunday, people feel like they need to respond. I like what you said about prefacing it and saying, you don't have to respond. I'm just sending this to get off my plate if I'm doing that off hours. One other thing that I've tried to do is time emails. I use the option in Outlook to delay send until Monday morning, 8 o'clock. So sometimes people will get a barrage of emails from me at 8 a.m. on Monday, but it's because I've worked on those during the weekend and I want to get them off my plate. So that's so I think there's some sensitivity when you're a manager to not communicate during those times. I think that's a little bit about what you're saying.
I think that's very cool. And if I actually thought about it, I probably would do something similar. But you should preface it. If this isn't important, that this can wait until Monday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what do you say to somebody who's got a manager who's violating those boundaries and they're kind of abusing them on the other side? When do you kind of say, hey, I want this work-life integration that you're talking about. I want to be, make the work for my life and my work, but I feel like my manager is kind of violating those things. How do you have that difficult conversation? And when is it time to leave and find another place?
Well, I would, if you came to me and you and I worked together and saying, man, I'm having this challenge with my boss or something like that, I would have that very conversation. I'd say, here, set up a call or set up a conversation with your boss and say, look, I work really, really hard and I work as hard as absolutely needed, things like that. But sometimes, you interrupt a weekend or an evening for something that could definitely wait until the next day. One of the reasons I think I'm a decent employee here, Mr. Jones, is I know boundary conditions. I know when I should be spending time with my kids and with my wife but I am happy to do work on the weekends and off times and things like that. But we need to prioritize this stuff. And that's a message that I'm not going to respond to until Monday.
Yeah. And then what do you say to the employer who's got and this is almost like a millennium cliche, who's got an employee that's kind of making them feel like they're lucky that they're showing up at all. And they're kind of putting in the minimum amount of time, this concept of basically barely showing up and doing remote work. So how do you as the employer kind of say, I need more, or this isn't working for me?
Well, I'll tell you, that's far tougher because especially with certain generations, there is a sense of entitlement. It's ironic. I saw a study about millennials and about value systems and things like that, and actually they have the same value systems as the boomers. They wanted to save the world when they were 21 years old. It's almost identical. The difference is that boomers raised millennials and have told them, given them participation trophies and told them people can't treat you like that. And then they have their first job and the boss says you need to work till 6:30 on a Friday night to get this proposal out. Says he can't do that. And you call dad and say, the heck he can't. this is how it works. But I have had, employees that do the minimum that have a certain sense of entitlement and have had to have a conversation. It's like, look, this is the way we work, and I want to be very forgiving. And if you need some time or you've got a crisis at home, I want to give you some space. But on the other hand, this kind of role demands that you show up and you take every pitch and you swing for the rafters. And I got a sense that you're not thrilled here. I mean, is this a time that we should start talking about how to improve that or way out?
It sounds like you're really good at what I'll call from the book, radical candor, like this idea that, I'm going to kind of recognize you for who you are in a quality way. I'm going to appreciate you, but I'm going to tell you very clearly what I feel about what you're doing and, what you need to do to be successful. Have you always been that way? Is that kind of a natural gift you have, or do you feel like that's something you've kind of grown into?
I probably have always been that way. I got a job out of college, kind of a line worker in an advertising department for a big retail chain. And my boss was caught stealing from the company. And they warned her and she did it again. So now they're faced with this kid who's barely shaving, wet behind the ears, or hiring someone who, you know, who'd be a better manager of this department. And for some reason, they gave me an opportunity, probably because they knew I was going to have to train my boss, you know, and things like that. So they said, let's give the kid a shot. Well, now I'm in a position where I'm managing a team of people, and literally, quite literally, everybody was twice my age. You know, I literally barely shaving, and I'm now telling people what to do. You can't go to them and say, David, and David says, well, why should I do that? I don't agree with that. And say, because I told you so, or because I know better, because I didn't know better. And to say I told you so is not a way to win friends and influence people. So I had to work. You know, this was an intelligence. This was just evolution, but a collaborative style where I'm kind of like selling people that work for me on an idea, and partly because I was just so young, and I think I've kind of taken that with me throughout my career, and I haven't changed that. Now I'm older and maybe have given more authority. I still don't think. I think you and I talked last time about a Norman Schwartz quote that my favorite is, a title gives you responsibility, but people give you respect. And we have to earn people's respect. We can't legislate the respect. We can't demand respect because I'm bigger, more powerful, or make more money, or better educated, or have a higher title. You know, as you're managing up and you're managing down and you're managing across, you want to bring people across to your way of thinking, hopefully, and you want to be open to their line of thinking. It's kind of emotional intelligence, really.
Yeah, that is super powerful. And that respect that you earn, that pays off huge in work-life integration on the work side and on the personal side, doesn't it? Because you kind of you show up and you earn that respect in both areas. And I think that feels like that's part of what makes that work. If you don't have respect for the people you work for or your friends or family, both of those are gonna feels like that's gonna fall apart.
Well, going back to that point of that man that wouldn't go back to Boston to see his daughter who was ill in the hospital, I lost a lot of respect for him. Hmm. Smart, you know, savvy, had some vision and stuff like that, but he wasn't a good guy, you know? And all of a sudden his flag, you know, dipped in my perspective because he didn't know where to draw the line. And is there anything more important? I mean, we would take a bullet for our kids. I mean, we would do anything for our kids. There's not any other kind of love that's stronger than that. And how could you not go home, you know, for your daughter? So I had lost some respect there, but I realized he didn't have a sense of balance. He didn't have a sense of respect for his own family, you know, that or knew what was important. Part of it's emotional intelligence. And that's something I've now reluctantly decided that you're either born with it or you're not. It can be nurtured to some degree, but there are a lot of people that just have no emotional intelligence. They don't know when to come out of the rain. They don't know how to create the right kinds of boundaries. Now, if he can't make that own decision with his daughter, how can I expect him to make a decision with the future of the company?
Yeah, absolutely. These are some amazing ideas. Hey, I want to transition a little bit to talk about some of your work and things that you're doing now. You're involved, your company Impact Enterprises. Tell me what that's all about.
Yes. So this is a labor of love, really. The founding partners came to me a few years ago and they saw the work that I had been doing in the inner city with education. They knew I'd been president of Education Dynamics and things like that. And they said, boy, we have a CEO opportunity for you. So I took a look at this company and it is an impact outsourcing company. Impact means you are living within the guidelines that you are helping to a struggling community, whether it's, you know, here in the United States or it's abroad. You know, I run this company in Chapada, Zambia, which is an Eastern rural Zambia, very agricultural world. And the original founder of our company, who founded this company back in 2013, had built NGO school, non-government organization schools in Zambia as part of his, you know, going out and saving the world initiative out of college. And he really, you know, I mean, put together these beautiful schools so you have a great curriculum, you hire teachers, you raise money, you build these schools, and then you graduate these children in the eastern provinces of Zambia. And now what? You know, you can't get into college. You don't have the money. You don't have the CV to get into college at that point, graduating high school. But you're smart and you're able and you're willing. It's up to 59% unemployment in eastern provinces of Zambia and up in the Copper Belt. So he started this company saying we have to have something where we could train and employ young Zambians, because there's research that shows for every Zambian that you employ, it feeds six mouths. So there's a sort of a moral responsibility to these unemployed people, and it's a fabulous culture, wonderful human beings. And we do data labeling for artificial intelligence, machine learning. You have to draw boxes around objects or video objects or natural language processing in order for a computer to say, I've seen that enough, I know that this is a fire hydrant. I've seen that enough, I know that this is a scrape on a container ship. You know, or we did a project recently where we're drawing boxes around power lines. So you've got power lines as they're closer to the camera, going away from the camera, thick pixels, small pixels, and then computers can learn when something is going wrong and identify when there's going to be a transmission failure. So we do that. We do back-end customer support and customer service via chat. We do data curation for social media and content and categorize things. We respond as people on social if needed. And then our big nut is where we do data research for lead generation. A company in London comes to us and say, we're trying to reach CTOs in these countries, and they need to be companies 100 to 300. And we want to know a little bit about this person before we write them a note. So we'll do the research to find out that David Reske, who spoke at a conference, and this is his opinion. And then the copywriter can write that specifically. We don't write the copy, but we do all the research.
Wow. So that sounds like a really interesting and very complicated company to run. So, because you're doing all these really important business services, and you could be doing these services with people in the US or Europe or India or Zambia. Right. How do you connect the kind of the mission, and why Zambia? Is really just because it started there, or
passionate? There's a huge need. This need is all over Africa. It's all over developing and third world country, what we used to call third world countries, and it's certainly here in neighborhoods in the United States. You know, that we have the same challenges. I mean, I always say without educating the urban inner cities of America, we're never going to reestablish a middle class in those cities. And it's actually part of that which got these people at Impact Enterprises and me on their radar. But so you're managing a team in Zambia, which is always a challenge, although we've become better and better at online, conversations and communications and job reviews and hiring and firing and all the things that you need to do, we can do online. About 60% of our customers are in English-speaking Europe, and the other 40% are here in the United States. We do literally no business in Africa, not by design. It's just that the companies that need to scale these kinds of businesses. I mean, look, it's very attractive, the kinds of rates we can charge. We can be 20% of what someone would need to do it for if they did it domestically here in the States or over in Europe. But the tiebreaker, what wins all ties, is the fact that we're doing such a wonderful service for these young people in Africa. And because of the high unemployment rates, we have an enormous bucket of people to pick from. I mean, we can really cherry pick the people who have the right attitude and who did well in school and where they want to go with their lives or their careers. We can employ them. We put them through something called an Impact Academy, which isn't just training how to do better research with Excel or Airtable, and spreadsheets and things like that. But we can teach women how you don't let men treat you in the workplace. We can tell men how you don't treat women in the workplace. We can teach cultural things as well as sort of academic enrichment. If we do a good job with these high school graduates, they have a better chance of getting into college and getting scholarship money. But we're also now finding ourselves hiring college graduates who are also unemployed, because some of the data, the intensity that we're doing requires a little bit more experience, a little bit more education to do it. But we're still providing a job for the unemployed. And we bring in meals every day. We provide transportation if the sun is down. Zambia is a incredible place to do business because it's an English speaking. It's always been English speaking. I mean, they do speak tribal languages in the villages, but they also speak English. They were born and raised speaking English. Zambia is the only colonial country in Africa that had a peaceful transition when it changed over from the English colonialism back to an African country. It was North Rhodesia. It was the only country in Africa that elected their president. It didn't have a civil war. So it's a very stable government, relatively stable currency, and a rich culture that believes in working. So it's a good place to do business if you're going to do it in Africa.
Yeah, I think that sounds so exciting. You and I talked about some work I did with nonprofits in Zambia, and I love what you're doing there because it's so sustainable. So, you know, it's the old cliche, give a person a fish and they'll fish, you know, eat for a day, and teach them to fish and they'll, you know, eat for a lifetime. Right. And so you're building a sustainable business and an economy there that could make a huge difference for thousands of people over generations, rather than giving them some food or whatever.
Right. And so there's no need to leave Zambia right now. We could be pretty darn big before we've saturated the pool. We haven't even moved into Lusaka, the big city. We haven't moved into the Copper Belt, which is north, which is also fairly poor, or actually very poor. But so there's plenty of room for us to grow. And we've talked about the work from home models, you know, where you're getting college students and things like that. We haven't ruled that out, but we would still stay within the boundaries, I think, of Zambia for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, it feels like for your mission, bringing those people together to teach those work and life skills works well for you. So that's
it does. I mean, I had one of our young men when I was down in Africa last November saying, because we do girl coding events and we do coaching events on the side, saying you're doing an awful lot for the girls here and not for the boys. And they say girls and boys down there, so I'm not being demeaning, but and I said, well, you kind of have to, because you have to trade in such a way that they know what they should expect or what should be tolerated in the Western world, business world. And I said, if you move down to Lusaka, I said, you know, we try to create an equal number of female supervisors, managers. So in some ways, the guys think we're favoring the women, you know, because it's not all equal, but we're about 60-40 men and women. So I think we're doing the right thing.
That's awesome. Well, Michael, this has been an amazing conversation about work-life balance and about what you're doing with Impact Enterprises. If someone wanted to connect with you for your business or for Impact Enterprises, how would they do that?
Michael@impactenterprises.org. Anybody can feel free to reach out at any time, even if they just want to pick my brain. Doesn't have to have a mission.
Perfect. Thanks, okay. Michael. Really
Thank you, David.
Appreciate your time today. Great talking to you.
I've enjoyed it. Bye-bye.